We said a few times this week to expect the details of the CFAP 2 program, and we've got them for you this morning. There are more bean sales to talk about, more corn sales to talk about, and I'm sure we'll get to the presidential campaigns on today's Free for All.
Live from a wool socks and flip-flops kind of morning via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll talk with USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey. Then it's on to our Friday free-for-all. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Pam Johnson all lined up. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, you know, there's not many that can pull off the wool sock and flip-flop look. But yes. I think you're there. Yeah, you might be one of the guys.
I'm all about it. I'm all about it. And I don't know. It's not the flip-flops that go between your toe. I think the kids call them slides. They're slides.
Yeah.
So it's wool socks and slides. But, slides. You know, flip-flops has got the alliteration going. It's better radio. It's just better. It's better.
And it's a look. I'm expecting pictures on Twitter later. Hashtag AgriTalk.
I'll send them right now. Yeah.
All right. All right. Yeah, let's
see. Okay. I'll even get my space heater in there, too. Look out, America. Here comes a tweet. Yeah, baby.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You know what? Jim Wiesmeyer just sent me a text, and he said to check out the president's Twitter feed. And here's an interesting one. It's been out there for an hour, I guess, and I've been working on other things. But Pelosi wants to take $30 billion away from our great farmers. Can't let that happen. We'll find out from Jim what that is all about. It's got to be about CCC funding is what we're talking about there. So we'll find out from Jim coming up here in a little bit. Undersecretary Northey was very generous with his time this morning on a very busy morning. We had a conversation with him earlier. And we will be playing that back for you here in the next segment. It's got some of the details, some of the much-anticipated details of the CFAP 2 program. Okay, man, should we get to it? What do you got?
Well, Chip, at a campaign event yesterday in Wisconsin, President Trump did announce the new CFAP. He said it would total $13 billion. Funds will be provided by the Commodity Credit Corporation, or CCC, according to Senator John Hoeven. In April, the administration released $19 billion in ag-related relief funds via the CARES Act, including $16 billion in direct payments to farmers and ranchers, along with purchases of dairy, meat, and produce. USDA disputes Trump's math on CFAP 2, however, putting the total cost closer to $14 billion.
Yeah.
Enrollment begins Monday, September 21. Deadline for sign-up, December 11. Just some housekeeping here.
Yep.
Funds will compensate farmers for losses related to COVID-19 since April 15. We'll get more from Undersecretary Northey on this coming up, Chip.
Yeah, and this one of the things that listen for it very closely. What Secretary Northey is emphasizing is that this is for losses on 2020 crops, crops. So when we're figuring the payments, you've got to keep that in mind.
Members of OPEC Plus met this week to discuss production levels in light of the expectations for slower than expected crude oil demand growth, or should I say regrowth. In reference to the economic recovery following worldwide shutdowns, the International Energy Agency wrote in its outlook, quote, demand is not expected to reach pre-crisis levels before the end of the year, with December demand projected to be down 2.7 million barrels per day from December 2019 levels. Now, Chip, in recent years past, OPEC Plus output has averaged around 30 million barrels per day. That's been a pretty solid figure. After enacting mandatory cuts among members, 2020's OPEC Plus production has fallen to around 20 million barrels per day. And actually, we're going to go into this in the fourth segment in the afternoon show today. I'll have some numbers and some deeper thoughts on this.
Perfect. Because this is obviously it's a topic that we all need to stay on top of. Very good. Thanks.
Well, biofuel proponents are upset with the Trump administration over his promised $300 million payout to small refinery waiver applications. The biofuel industry, along with farm state lawmakers, criticized as Sonny Perdue, USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue, for not using CCC funds to compensate ethanol producers as the administration reaches out to assist conventional refiners. And get this, Chip, Trump's political opponents, they smell blood in the water, apparently. They're now taking up ethanol as a key campaign issue. How do you like them apples?
Right. Huh? If they grab the CCC funds and dole them out to refiners,
mm-hmm.
Senator Chuck Grassley might lose his... I don't see any way that Senator Grassley is going to let that happen. I just don't think it will. Not CCC funds, I don't mm-hmm. think.
On Capitol Hill, lawmakers continue to work on a stopgap funding measure that would allow a one-year extension of the nation's highway law, which is set to expire on September 30. Representative Tim Cole of Oklahoma remarked, quote, "I don't think anybody wants to be responsible for shutting down the government on the eve of an election in the middle of a pandemic, so it's a rare outbreak of common sense on both sides." Wow. How do you like that?
I love it. I love it. Very good.
And the first in-person voting precincts open for business today, with two states kicking off the start of the early voting season. That's according to Ballotpedia. Starting today, state statutes in Minnesota, South Dakota provide that residents can visit in-person voting sites. Five more states, Michigan, New Jersey, Vermont, Virginia, and Wyoming, will follow on Saturday, tomorrow, September 19. Chip.
Yeah. Back on those, the payment to the refiners.
Yeah.
Michael Zona, the communications director for the Senate Finance Committee, of which Senator Grassley is chairman, said giving away Commodity Credit Corporation funds to big oil that were meant for struggling farmers would be an outrage. Thankfully, the law is clear, so there's no reason to believe Secretary Perdue would ever consider such a thing. Given the Trump administration's rejection of gap year SREs this week, it's not a big surprise that big oil is looking elsewhere for government handouts.
All right.
Okay? All right. Thanks, buddy. Okay. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How you doing, Jennifer?
Doing good.
Good, good, good. So are pork exports, aren't they?
They sure are doing pretty good right now. I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of things moving in the marketplace and some new opportunities open up, but right now things are looking pretty good and we're still maintaining that record pace for 2020.
Yeah, now we're maintaining that pace for 2020. I think that's through the first half of the year. What's it done to price of pork?
Well, I think we're facing a lot of challenges right now. I've had a lot of producers call me up actually in the past couple of weeks, and they just, you know, they're frustrated that they're not seeing that, you know, with all these record exports or at least good exports going on, why aren't they seeing that value? And, you know, it's tough right now because the packers seem to be running at a point where they've got what they need and they don't need to pay more. And so, exports are certainly helping us right now. I mean, we'd be in a much worse place without them. We'd have a lot of hogs that we would have had to euthanize. Being able to send those hogs over to China was super critical for us this spring. But, you know, the Germany breaking with ASF has helped us for a while. But, you know, I've talked to a few economists this week that aren't expecting that to last for too long.
Okay. Yeah, but boy, it was sure was a nice bounce. And we've held on to most of that, you know, roughly $5.5-$6 gain there. So that is helping out. Jennifer, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. That's Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Okay. Coming up next, special conversation with Undersecretary for Production and Conservation, Bill Northey, right here on AgriTalk.
Show how you farm on by purchasing name brand merchandise from Farm Journal and Cowpokes Work and Western. Visit cowpokesonline.com right now, and $2 of every item purchased will be donated to 4-H.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Big news. We've got the details of the CFAP 2 program. Joining us right now is Bill Northey, Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation. And, Bill, welcome to AgriTalk. Thank you so much.
You bet. Glad to be with you, Chip.
Okay. We've also got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, with us. Bill, let's start with this, if we could. What's different? What's the same from CFAP 1?
Well, we are looking. We've got a bucket that looks at kind of the major commodities like corn and soybeans and wheat, as well as cattle and dairy, that really does look at a a 5% price loss and develops a rate for each of those commodities. So there's some similarity there. This is really about the 2020 crop. So it's not based on previous history. It's based on 2020 production. We look at what acres are planted this year and then the APH, the production history that folks have, and figure the coverage level at that. But we have a couple new buckets. One is a flat rate category for crops that either don't have good information or didn't show price loss, and we pay a $15 per acre flat rate. That's also the minimum in the first category. And then for specialty crops, we really struggled last time in trying to figure out different rates for different commodities, figure out what the right amounts were. So this time we're looking at specialty crops and specialty livestock. We're looking at the revenue from 2019, and we're paying a percentage of that revenue, about 10% of that revenue, a little more for smaller operations, a little less for larger operations.
Okay, the revenue angle, that is different. It's there was talk that it was going to be included in this. Obviously, that's in reaction to some comments, questions from producers before these details were put together, right?
Yeah, we've been, of course, looking at many different ways to try and cover, you know, commodities that are extremely important to the producers and to all of us, but maybe don't have a lot of good price information. Or have a lot of differences. You've got organic crops, you've got, you know, romaine lettuce and iceberg lettuce, and each of them have different prices, and they maybe have different prices during the season. So what we're going to do is look at what a producer had for an on-farm price revenue in 2019 and then take a percentage of that. So you may have 15 crops on your farm. I may have one crop that fits in this category. What matters is what our revenue was as opposed to isolating each one of those and having a different rate for each of those crops.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. The three components, the price trigger on commodities, the flat rate on the crop, sales commodities, it may add a level of confusion to some of the producers, but they just need to find out where their commodity fits, right?
It really will be fairly straightforward in each of those commodities. If you produce triticale, you're going to be in the flat rate, the $15. But if you produce wheat, you're actually going to be in the price loss commodity, so you'll have a rate for that commodity. And in each of those cases, for the flat rate, we just need acres. For the price loss commodities, we already have a loss set. We have a percentage of crop that's marketed in 2020, and what we need is acres and our production history there. We'll have those numbers at the FSA office for each producer, and it should be very easy to sign up for those as well as for that third category on gross revenue.
Okay. All right. Jim, what's been your initial reaction here?
Quick. Yeah, Bill. Ken, I noticed you added some more classes for wheat. What changed to CFAP 1 to CFAP 2? And can a wheat class producer who didn't get CFAP 1 go back and get it now?
So CFAP 1 is its own program, standalone. So this is not a replacement for the provisions in CFAP 1. This is for CFAP 2. So this is for 2020 production. And what we saw was we actually saw the price drop after that initial quarter. Then the quarter that we were originally measuring from January to April, for many classes of wheat, actually saw the price go up. But since then, we saw the price drop. Therefore, it had more than a 5% price loss, and that's why it now qualifies. And then we did put all the classes together. We heard from folks that it's hard when you have the classes separate. That allowed us to cover some classes last time instead of no classes. This time it makes sense to be able to have them all together and have one rate for wheat, and we combine those classes.
I noticed on revenue, you went that way on livestock, where farm policy analysts usually say that's a far, you know, better approach and a fair approach. Why didn't you go revenue on the crop side?
We did revenue for our specialty crops, but for the bigger crops where we actually have price losses, we could separate and we could look at how much prices had gone down for soybeans versus corn. Now, we were taking these price losses from January through the end of July when we had to put the rule together and the pieces together. In some cases, prices have changed since then. In some cases, the dry weather have caused the prices actually to creep back up to higher levels. So we've not, you know, we just don't have that same amount of drop. But that allowed us to be a little more specific for the different crops.
And my last one, real quick, payment caps. Why do you have to have them? Because the structure, especially in the meat industry, the livestock industry, that really negatively impacts them.
You know, payment limits are a function of what Congress has continued to set up and the way they've constructed farm bills. We continue to look to Congress to give us green light to change them one way or the other. We'll do that, but right now we're taking as much direction in the way we set this up, like Congress has used some criteria in the past to address payment cap.
Bill, talk to hog producers on this. What can they expect from a CFAP 2 payment?
They need to give us their inventory at a date between April and August, April 15th and August 31. And they choose the date of that inventory. They need to give us the number of pigs that they had on hand that are non-breeding animals. So don't give us the sows and boars. Give us bred gilts that haven't pigged yet, but don't give us sows and boars or even culled sows. The idea is those typically are kept for longer periods of time, and we're looking at market animals that are much more likely to move. So they give us that. I have that rate in front of me. Was it $23, I believe, per head? They will get 100% of the check. Last time around, we went 80%, and then we came back later and did 20%. So they would get the full check up front. We believe we have enough money to be able to pay everybody that we think will come in. And so we'll cut the full 100% check as soon as we get an application finished and through our payment process.
Okay. $23 a head on the hogs. What is it on the market cattle?
The cattle are $55.
Okay.
And so it's an inventory payment again. We're not asking for sales by certain dates, and we don't create those kinds of cutoffs. But again, it's non-breeding animals, so it's not the cows and the bulls, but it is calves from a day old to 1,500 pounds. It certainly could be bred heifers that haven't calved yet, but it's not cows.
Okay. Just a general comment here, Bill. This has got to be the most inclusive USDA payment program ever, right?
Yeah. We haven't done a comparison, but I can't think of anything that could be bigger than this. Really, about the only thing we're not covering is we are covering alfalfa, but we're not covering other hay or pasture land. We're not covering horses or companion animals, but pretty much anything produced for meat or for fuel or for fiber out there, we are covering.
Gotcha.
And we have a long list. You can go to farmers.gov/CFAP, figure out which category your commodities are in. In fact, there's a tool there that you can just type them in, and it'll tell you what category those are in. The rate should be there as well. Come Monday, when sign up opens up, we'll have a calculator there that folks can go on, similar to last time, fill out the form themselves. If they do have an e-authorization with us, they can actually send it in, I think, starting Monday or Tuesday, but at least by next week sometime. But they certainly can fill it out online, print it, sign it, drop it by an office, or mail it in or email it in as well.
Okay, farmers.gov/CFAP. Starts on Monday, correct. Runs through December 11th, correct?
Correct. That's right.
Okay. All right. Bill, there was some talk, some speculation that there would be some aid included in this package for processors. Is there anything there?
There is not. For CCC, we have some limitations on what we can do. I think the discussion primarily has been around what Congress is looking at right now for processors, mm-hmm. whether it's ethanol plants or even for euthanized livestock. Congress is talking about some of those provisions. I'm not sure, and Jim could tell us more about what they're going to do or where they're going to be at. But those provisions would need to be added by Congress, and so they're not part of this program.
Excellent. Mr. Northey, you've been very generous with your time here this morning. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you, guys. appreciate it.
All right. That is Bill Knorr, the Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at USDA. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us right now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, these beans, you can't hold a good market down, can you?
Well, 11 days in a row with China in the market as a buyer of U.S. soybeans. So that streak continues here. And like you mentioned, just continue on with the price movement to the upside here. Funds continue to pump money into the long side of the market. And who knows when it'll end. But it's probably going to be tied to whenever China's string of buying of beans stops, because now it's kind of like an IV. The market's almost dependent on it at this point in time. So,
yep. Yeah. Yesterday, the bull spreads really ran in soybeans. Today, a little bit of a correction there, but not much.
A little bit, but we still have the front end of the market leading us. So November, overall, November is trading at a premium to the deferred contracts at this point in time. And so that somewhat of a concern there on that front that, the bull spreads, as long as they work, it's a good thing. When they stop working, then, we're probably going to see quite a bit of correction in the market.
Gotcha. Okay. Beans are helping to pull corn to the upside, slightly higher there, but wheat seems to be performing on its own.
Yeah, wheat's picked up a little bit here. Had a big performance yesterday in the winter wheat markets and follow through today. So, the chart action looks pretty good, actually, on the daily winter wheat charts. Both flags with upside breakouts going there.
Yep, not much happening in hogs, but we've got some gains in cattle.
Yeah, a little bit of weaker price tone in the hog market so far this morning. Really strong price performance in the cattle. They had kind of paused, but now they're pushing to the upside again.
Excellent. Good stuff, Brian. Have a good weekend. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Valent for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. Again, a big thank you to Undersecretary Northey for making time for us this morning. You can get 24/7 free access to all of the great content from Farm Journal Field Days at agweb.com/fielddaysondemand. The best of Farm Journal Field Days is brought to you by Channel and the new hashtag Growing Ahead initiative sponsored by Bayer. Follow at Channel Seed on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to see how local teams have gone virtual to keep delivering solid agronomic advice. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Chip.
Good. We'll get to you here in a minute. Jim Wiesmeyer, ProFarmer Policy Analyst, is back with us. And let's go straight to Iowa farmer Pam Johnson, past president of the NCGA and Mazal. There's some of the CFAP details, Pam. What do you make of it?
Good morning. Well, I think we kind of expected it. And it's good news. And I think I would just sum it up. I was reading Twitter this morning, and Nate Kaufman out of the Kansas City Reserve said, it's going to be meaningful for so many people, but it really doesn't address the longer-term issues in the sector. And he advises if we're really wise, we're going to use this for working capital to help build in 2021 and beyond. So as a farmer, I think this is good news for a lot of people and especially the livestock guys. But it's like, so what do they know that we don't know? Is this going to keep dragging on? And is this how we're going to expect we're going to get our money from here for a while yet? So I think there are a lot of questions. And the debate on Twitter with farmers of both parties is this a good thing?
I wouldn't say that it's a good thing, Pam. I mean, it's in some cases, I'll throw it out there. I don't know if it's even a necessary thing in some cases, but it's a reality of where we're at. I talked with John Newton, chief economist at AFBF yesterday, Jim, about the ad hoc payments, about the MFP, about the CFAP payments and everything. And then throw on top of that the expected PLC payments. We're kind of reshaping farm policy going forward, aren't we, Wiesmeyer?
Yeah, we could. Well, at least they're trying. And, John's one of the smartest people I've seen come to Washington in a long time. So kudos to Farm Bureau. You've got soybean futures surging to their highest level, Chip, on the weekly continuation chart since June 1, 2018. Okay.
Yeah. 1040 bean prices.
Yeah. Doesn't that what makes this like? Is this kind of the last round of this? If these prices hold where they are, because are we not kind of reaching that sort of intersection point there, or the apex of, we've been really hurt by these trade deals and we got COVID, but at the same time we're talking about how, hey, look at China buying, and trying to meet these commitments of the phase one deal. We can't have it both ways. So at some point, we're sort of passing the finish line on this. This week, airline executives were at the White House. They're looking at possibly laying off post September 30th, 30,000 people. They're looking for $25 billion. They phrased it as a grant. And I can tell you on Fox Business and CNBC, they laughed at that. Free money that doesn't have to be repaid? Are you kidding me? We can't do this for any industry. I was sitting there thinking, well, we've been doing it for agriculture for 3 years. I think we're kind of reaching the end point of this. At least I think so.
Well,
and I think the discussion that farmers are having too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Pam, 100% agreement on that. Jim, if this wasn't a presidential election year, would this CFAP 2 program be happening?
I don't think to the degree that you've seen, and the debate is already beginning as we are currently discussing, and that debate will pick up momentum after the elections whenever they're known. So, yeah, I think you're seeing the apex right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, the chatter out in the community and on social media is, when does it start to feel like dirty money? And when is it start to feel like it? Is it just for our vote?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are in that's all accurate. Okay, but we also have to remember that we are in the middle of one of the biggest market disruptions that we have ever experienced in anything. Now, are we climbing up out of it? Absolutely, absolutely. Where would we be had the pandemic and the economic shutdown that happened as a result of it, where would we be had that not happened? I don't have an answer for that. But I think what some of these payments, the CFAP 2 payments, are designed to do, and Pam, you nailed it when you said, especially for the livestock producers, this is designed to still offset some of the, what some states has ruled was an unconstitutional shutdown of the economy. So when you look at it from that perspective, Jim, all of a sudden, these payments, they may be justified.
Well, not only is agriculture a strategic industry, national security, et cetera, so are airports when you think about it, from a defense perspective. So I don't care whether you call it dirty. When the pie is passed, you take a piece, and these are strategic industries.
There, you're pulling out the old Meryl Oster on us right there, Wiesmeyer. Yep. Yep. Let's go back to another.
I always advocated for farm policy that really helped farmers when they absolutely needed it. Mm-hmm. And so that's a fine line to walk right now. And one of the hardest things I ever had to do was go to the Chicago Tribune and justify payments made under the last Farm Bill payments and said, look, guys, we're moving away from this. We're moving into a market-oriented program. So, I think that's what most of us want to get back to, and know that the road has been bumpy. But like Sean said, there's other people in other sectors out there, too, who are hurting just as much as we are. And, yes, we're essential important to national security.
It began with the shadow loss payment program that was so embarrassing they had to rename the program ARC. So it really began with the corn and soybeans getting greedy.
Well, we can agree to disagree and discuss that enough.
When prices were a lot higher, they wanted that shallow part that was unprotected. Yeah. To me, that's a definition of greed.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Okay, let's stay on USDA, but change subject here. Jim, you were on this move by Senske for quite some time. What's the latest?
Yeah, well, I just used common sense. I said, oh, that doesn't smell right for an ASA who hadn't been there that long. And I know there's been other reasons why. And then I know that that job of deputy secretary is hard because they're there almost every day. They're the glue that holds USDA together. And he's probably tired. And he was a very good CEO at ASA for over 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got... Deputy Secretary Senske going to back to ASA, the American Soybean Association. Hey, I'm getting some texts sent my way. Jim, talk about when we wrapped up with Secretary Northey this morning, you asked him about the payment limits.
Yeah, when you translated him to, you know, what his response, because my position is, especially in the livestock sector, that payment cap, number one, should at least be higher than it is because of the structure of the industry. And two, you know, there really shouldn't be one in these types of times. Oh, that'll bring out the small anti-farm program people. However, Northey took the more, I think, common perspective that you have to have some constraints on this. And you know, that's kind of where he was going at, that it's not so open-ended.
Right. But it's so broad across you guys asked him the question, is this not one of the most broad encompassing programs? And, you know, he kind of agreed with you, but it makes you ask the question, is it really getting the money to the parts of the farm sector that have been the most impacted by COVID, which is the actual intent of the money in the first place? You know, it does make you wonder that, especially when you look at the pork sector as an example.
Well, beef is getting it, as you can see from the CFAP 1 payment numbers, that they're getting, over 50% of the payouts. I agree with you on hogs. They needed a better program.
Yeah. Yeah. Payment limit is $250 per person for entity or for all commodities combined. Okay. So applicants who are corporations, limited liabilities, limited partnerships may qualify for additional payment limits when members actively provide personal labor or personal management for the farm operation.
And that's $250,000, Chip.
Yeah, what did I say?
I think 250.
Oh, yeah, 250.
That's my bar bill.
$250 million.
Easy, boys. Easy. So, yeah, $250,000 is the payment limit on there. Hey, we're running right up against it. Sean, get us started on the clean fuel standard.
So big discussion here in Canada is potentially the Canadian version of the RFS. A lot of discussions. They're talking about actually, Chip, having by 2030, E15 is the mandate, as well as 11% on biodiesel. So big time demand increase. But there's a huge fight over what the land use regulations could look like in order to meet some of the carbon decrease goals that they have with some of their international partners in Kyoto. So big fight up here.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, we'll discuss that. We'll start with that when we come back on the free-for-all. Pam Johnson, Iowa Farmer, Pro Farmers, Jim Wiesmeyer, and Real Agriculture, Sean Haney. We'll be back with AgriTalk in a moment.
Show how you farm on by purchasing name brand merchandise from Farm Journal and Cowpokes Work at Western. Visit cowpokesonline.com right now, and $2 of every item purchased will be donated to 4-H.
Okay, we need to keep moving here. Welcome back to AgriTalk and the free-for-all. We've got Pam Johnson, Sean Haney, Jim Wiesmeyer with us. Sean, you were talking about the clean fuel standard up in Canada. What's the backbone of the clean fuel standard?
Well, it's about Canada achieving its, trying to lower the carbon intensity of its fuel. Now, so the numbers in terms of demand of feedstocks is, it's luring, right? It's like, oh, that sounds really good. I'll triple the amount of corn that goes into the ethanol production. The carrot here, though, is that the draft land use regulations are talking about, not being able to clear brush. You can't clear trees off your property. And if you don't do, if you do those things, you wouldn't be able to sell into the biofuel market. Now, those regulations are coming out of the Ministry of Environment. They are draft regulations, but farmers are really pushing back on it, being very skeptical. Here's from an American perspective, here's what I thought of. When we get to the next version of the RFS, whatever that could look like, this is something that American farmers are going to want to pay attention to, the battle between environmentalists, including the biofuel, and then add energy to it. Could you see more land use restrictions on top of some of the things you're trying to do in biofuels? I think it's something you got to pay attention to.
Absolutely. So right now, the ethanol blend mandate in Canada is 5%?
Five, yep.
And
they're talking about going to 15. Biodiesel is currently 2, and they're talking about going to 11. So we're talking big jumps here, Chip.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. Certainly are. Jim, it was interesting when we asked Undersecretary Northey about the payments potentially coming from CCC to some of the processors. And he said, you know what, there's some restrictions on the CCC funds that we can't really use them for that. But yet, there's this talk of a $300 million payment from CCC to the refiners.
Northey, he said he wouldn't recommend that from the CCC as well. And two, this was just a conjecture based on a Reuters item, so you don't know the source. They could have been used. But I've talked to enough lawyers that I ever care to talk with. The CCC really doesn't have the authority to jump from the ag sector to the oil sector. So there'll be all sorts of fits on this one. I just don't see it happening, Jim.
Yeah, Pam, if they do that, that would just light everybody's hair on fire, wouldn't it?
Yeah, mine is already starting to smolder. But Jim, I thought it was a Trump announcement. I mean, that's what I read from Reuters. Did I read it wrong?
No, that they were mulling, that they were considering, and that's an open-ended thing. But they are looking into it. And even the oil industry fought back a little bit against it, some in it, because they said they want, they wanted more constraints put on the RFS. So they,
right.
That was a backhanded hit. Yeah. I don't think anything's, solidified on this one. And why did Trump not announce the good news, we think, for ethanol is because of his win-win situation. From the day one, he wanted a win-win on this one. And I think that's why he didn't want to announce the ethanol news.
Right.
Well,
right.
For us in the ethanol business, it seems like win-win means he makes an announcement that sounds good to ethanol, but then what he gives back to the oil industry just puts you further back in the hole. And like Chip, like you said, this would be one of the biggest slaps in the face if you take money from the Department of Agriculture to pay refiners because they refuse to blend ethanol and obey the law. Beyond belief.
Yep. At a time when we're looking at the restrictions on those CCC funds and saying, no, we can't use that to prop up our ethanol supporters.
Are due indemnity payments for livestock producers. How about that one?
Exactly. Yeah. We can't pay a hog producer that had to euthanize market ready hogs out of the CCC funds. Oh,
well,
and then we're going to. No, I just don't see it happening.
Well, and in a week where, Chip, you covered the wildfire situation on the West Coast really well this week, why is there not more criticism to USDA? Because there is USDA not responsible for some of the forestry? Why is there not more critical words being thrown USDA's way on that one?
I think the conversation about the timber management is as hot and as common sense as I've heard it in 20 or more years, Sean. Yeah. We're actually talking about getting that fuel out of the timbers now instead of just leaving it. Ken McCauley was on the Farmer Forum with us, and he was there when the RFS was being developed. He was president of the NCGA, I believe, right, Pam?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
yeah, we battled 15 by 15 by 15. All of us did.
Yes, that's right. But he was talking about the environmentalists. They had the idea of, well, listen, if we're looking for cellulosic materials, let's get into some of these national timbers, national forests, and start cleaning them up. And when they go in and log, let's go ahead and get the branches and the material and use that as a cellulosic source. And the environmentalists didn't want it to happen. Leave the fuel on the ground is basically what they said. It's crazy. Jim, you're doing something really cool this afternoon. We've got a live video stream of DC signal to noise. Isn't this like watching the sausage getting made, man?
Yeah, and you don't want to see me making sausage.
Oh, okay, 1 o'clock Central, 2 p.m. Eastern on the AgriTalk Facebook page. The AgriTalk Facebook page. It's a live video stream of DC Signal to Noise. You're going to be covering a lot of these issues. I know you are, including the current USDA China corn import estimate, Jim.
It's absolutely
ridiculously low. We've been talking about it on AgriTalk. We spent a lot of time talking about it with Steve Freed from ADM yesterday. Pam, thank you again. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Always great. The hour's too short.
It is. Sean Haney, thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yep. And Wiesmeyer, have fun with Signal to Noise, man.
And on to Pro Farmer. Bye.
And on to Pro Farmer. That's a live video stream, DC Signal to Noise, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern on the AgriTalk Facebook page. Come back this afternoon. I've got Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors, right here on AgriTalk.